If you don't sit in your lucky seat, your team could lose. So don't leave your lucky seat. But do pick up your phone or computer and order B-dubs to go. Or if you've got a big group, call in for the party menu. That way you can order wings, pick them up, and get back to your lucky seat. And if you do lose while sitting in your lucky seat, you can still feel lucky eating your feelings. Spicy feelings. Keep your superstitions. We do it for you. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Prices and participation vary. See participating locations for details. Void where prohibited.
Hey, listeners. My name's James.
And I'm Tim.
We're your hosts.
You're listening to The Wave of Wire.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Wave Wire. My name is James and as always I'm joined by my co-host Tim. Tim, how are you today?
I'm good today, James. And we've got a very special guest on. We've tried to get him on many times before, but he's finally here. Josh Lloyd, what's up?
Guys, how you going?
Very lucky to have you here, Josh. We've proclaimed you the king of fantasy.
I'll take the title. I don't know. The self-proclaimed bit's maybe going a bit far, but if you guys want to put the crown on, then who am I to say no?
Yeah, we'll definitely put the crown on you there, mate. How have things been going over there at the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast?
Yeah, going well. It's still cranking it out every day of the week. Talk way too much pretty much every episode and end up stretching the show for very, very long times, and yeah, need to have a water break halfway through because my voice goes, but otherwise it's going well. Good, got a good bunch of listeners over there as well, much like I'm sure you do with this podcast.
Yeah, man, just getting on that grind every week and making the fantasy dollars. But yours is definitely the best podcast, so anyone listening who hasn't listened to Josh's podcast, I highly recommend that. It's Red Rock Fantasy Basketball. You can find that pretty much everywhere, Josh.
Yeah, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Audio Boom, YouTube, wherever. It's all over the place.
Yeah, pretty much everywhere.
Dude, he's pretty accomplished.
Yeah, it's just
a while.
All across the board. All right, let's kick this off. We've got no league play this week, no DFS. We've just got a couple of questions that we're gonna, those vital knowledge going into the end of the All Star break, kicking off the playoffs. So
this is the most important part of the season, I reckon.
Absolutely, it is. But this is the most asked question, I reckon, over the last 3 weeks. Tim, Josh, is Middleton worthwhile as an ad for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think you have to at this point if he hasn't already been taken. I was a bit skeptical of him coming back. I thought that they would ease him in slowly and he'd play like 20 minutes a night for 2 to 3 weeks. But the last game we saw him on Wednesday, he played 26 minutes and scored 20 points and had 7 assists. And if they're playing him 26 minutes 1 week into his recovery, then by the time we hit the middle of February, I guess we're already in the middle of February, by the time we hit after the All-Star break, he's going to be getting 30 minutes a night and then it's back full force ahead and he's a top 30-ish type guy when he gets his full minutes back, so there's no point holding off on him.
I completely agree with that. Especially, how does Jabari Parker's injury mix in with this? Because he was taking a lot of minutes on the court, not in a very similar position really, but they do shuffle around their positions with Giannis able to play anywhere on the court. Does this open up even more minutes for Chris?
Well, initially, look, I don't think so. I thought that what they might do with Jabari going down is say, look, right, we've lost our other borderline all-star player. Let's not rush things with Chris. If there's any issue, let's take it a little bit slower because, we've already lost 11 out of 13 or whatever they'd lost up until that point. They're already sliding. They were out of the playoff pitch. I thought, you know what, they're just going to let Middleton ease back in. If they're all healthy, they're playing 37 minutes a night anyway, so I don't think that it enables Middleton to get more playing time. I'm a little surprised that they have pushed his timeline up. I thought they would ease back on it, but yeah, it looks like it's going to be completely independent, I think, of Jabari's situation.
Yeah, it looks like they've just gone, oh, fuck it. We have no Parker anymore. We'll just play Middleton until he burns out. But last year he averaged around 18 points, 4 assists, and 4 rebounds. Do you think that's attainable again sometime soon? He should be rested coming off the All-Star break, so, any wear and tear from those 4 games that obviously you'll be aching, not playing for 6 months or whatever. So do you reckon he can achieve those career highs that he got last year?
No, I don't think he can get to those levels, but I actually think the All-Star break coming at this point is a negative for him because, as you said, he's missed so much basketball and he was just sort of getting into a rhythm and now he has to sit a week. not great for necessarily his cardio recovery and his game fitness. That might mean that the first couple of games back he's a little bit slower out of the blocks, but otherwise he's going to get good numbers. He's going to be probably a top 50 guy, but I don't think he's going to get back to that level where he was last season, where post All-Star last year he was a top 20 player, and that's what he could have achieved this year had he not suffered that injury.
Yeah, do you think that maybe they should have held off until after the All-Star break to release Middleton, or was it worthwhile bringing him back early? Because this might change up his whole attitude towards how he plays. Now that he's come back, he's played a couple of games, he might be more confident, or do you think it was maybe better to hold him off until after?
I think that's an interesting point. It seems like he was ready to go for quite a bit before they got him out there, and they must have had that thought process of, we're going to get him in 1 week before it all ends, and just try it out and see how it goes. So I think that they deliberately did it 1 week. Give him 1 week. Here's three games. Let's see how it goes. That plan was in place before the Jabari injury. I don't think it's a negative that they did that.
Yeah, well, that's enough talking about one injured player. Let's just, we'll quickly skim over to another injured player, because there's not much else to say here, I don't think. Ben Simmons, the fellow Aussie. What do you think, Josh? No chance?
Is he ever coming back?
Yeah, next season. I don't see it happening this year. Look, Philadelphia is just, and I'm a big defender of the process and the way Hinkie did things and the building of the team, but they have bungled so much this season and just in the last 2 weeks. Like, the misinformation regarding Simmons' injury, the hiding of information that Colangelo and the team is going through, not revealing that his last scan showed that the bone wasn't fully healed, just continuing to say, oh, yeah, no, it's all fine, it's all good, we just got to get him back out there. Then we didn't hear an update for 2 to 3 weeks saying that he was practicing, oh, he's got a scrimmage 5-on-5 for 5 times, but then he never was able to do that, even though they said the last scan was clear. And now we find out the information that it wasn't, and the bone hasn't fully healed, and now they're, oh, we just want to take it slow. He's not playing this year. He might do a token Paul George, come in and play 10 minutes a game for the last 5 games of the year, but at this point I wouldn't be counting on it.
Yeah, he's definitely not worth picking up in your fantasy then. Nope. On to another Joel Embiid, another sixer. Is he worthwhile keeping on to now, or is he worth trading, especially now that they've gone super conservative. They're worrying about him a lot. And first of all, it was just he's just sprained an ankle or sprained his knee or something. And then they released that it was just a really tiny tear. Again, it's very similar to the Simmons situation. They release information a bit later than you expect. Is it worth holding on to him after the All-Star break? Do you reckon he returns like they say? Or should you trade on his value now and pick up someone else?
You can't 100% trust anything that's coming out of Philadelphia at the moment. They've got some good reporters who are digging into this stuff. Tom Moore, Derek Bodner, Keith Pompey, which are all good followers on Twitter, that they dig into this stuff, and they're the ones. Now, Pompey had the Simmons news today, and Bodner had the Embiid meniscus tear injury, so they're the ones getting the information out. So they're showing that, and everything that they're saying is that Joel is going to come back. Now, you said, do you try and trade him away now at his value? He has got no value at the moment. There is literally people who are telling me that he got dropped in their league. He has no value at the moment. So if he's dropped in your league, just automatically grab him. It's as no-brainer as a decision as there are. But people are saying, oh, yeah, should I drop him to pick up Monte Ellis? No, you should not. Even if he's got a 50% chance of not coming back, I want that 50% chance, because if he comes back at 50%, he's a top 20 per game player. And if he doesn't come back, then, oh, well, grab whatever spot on the waiver wire that's available.
You're just not Monte Ellis.
Whoever it is, make it CJ Miles, make it whoever. Just put Michael Beasley. There's just going to be random guys come up later, but making that decision now when we've got a week with no games to just say, oh, no, I'm dropping him. People are very obsessed with shutdowns, and in general, it's a crock of shit.
Yeah, no, that's completely agreeable, because you've got something called the injury list, which is, or the injury wire, or whatever you want to call it, which is, I find, very important, because at the moment mine's stacked, especially around All-Star break. You're always going to have players on there because people just go down all the time. So how important to you is using your IL? Because I've got Joel Embiid and I've got Gallinari on there, and both of them should be back after All-Star break, but I might have to fill it up with someone else soon too.
Yeah, it is important to use it strategically. Nearly always you should have someone on your roster that's expendable. So if someone who's injured and is a good player becomes available on the wire, you drop that expendable guy, grab the injured guy, slot him into your IL or IR spot, depending on where you play, and then go grab someone else off the wire. It can be used really strategically. And even the other thing that I like to do with it also is that sometimes you'll have a guy that's injured that's sitting in there, and people are like, let's use Gallinari's example. Yeah, the Rooster's coming back in 3 days. Who do I drop to activate him? And I said, don't drop anybody. Let's just see what happens. Let's wait until, A, he actually plays, and let's wait till maybe he gets through one game, because there's been multiple instances this year of players coming back, playing one game, and then being out for 3 more weeks. Avery Bradley, Rudy Gay.
Avery Bradley, exactly.
I can't even think, but there's been about four, Joel Embiid, about four or five guys have come back, played one game, and then been out for 3 more weeks, and then you've activated them, dropped someone. When in general, if someone's injured, I just leave them there for a day, unless it's Russ or it's Harden or whoever it is. But in general, I'll leave them there a day. Let's see what they do, because they might come back and play 20 minutes, and what's the point of activating them for there? And then in that extra day or two before that next play, someone else on your team might get injured, and you just do a direct switcheroo, and then you don't have to drop anyone.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's definitely a tactical advantage if you've got it. So, you've got that extra space on your roster to even have a look at someone. So your player's missing 2 or 3 days, and you just want to have a look at someone else, maybe like a Ben McLemore. Just check him out, see how he plays the next couple of games. And if he's rubbish, drop him, and you've got, maybe 10 extra points that you didn't have having someone exactly resting on your bench. But that will move me on to Ben McLemore. Do you buy the Ben McLemore career revival, or are you passing on that?
I like what he's doing. I like the way he's playing. I've always been a decent McLemore fan, and George Karl really killed him last season. He was coming on at the end of his second season and starting to play well. He's a really high or a strong rebounding guard who can get some steals. He hits threes, who can score. He handles the ball a little bit. He was coming on. But then Karl was there at the end of his second season. But last season, Karl destroyed him. He would give him no confidence. He'd yank him out after about 4 minutes of every game and then not put him back in. He'd end up playing 12 minutes a game as a starter. And Jaeger's been very similar at the start of this year. But you have to urge caution, because they're playing without Ty Lawson. They're playing without Garrett Temple. So when these guys come back, McLemore's not playing 30 minutes. I'd love him to, but I don't think he will. Now, a thing that I often say, guys, is when I'm looking at these guys who are having these breakout things, like, who's playing ahead of them? Who are the guys that are ahead of them? Are they useless? In the Kings situation, Aaron Aflalo, yes, he's useless. Yep, pretty bad. Garrett Temple, not good. So there is a chance he keeps that role. So as you said, grab him, see what happens. Let's see how it plays out over the All-Star break. But everything we've seen from Jaeger so far this season makes us think that he might retain a starting job, but he'll go back to 20 minutes instead of 30 minutes. And he only played 25 in that game where they got their pants pulled down against the Warriors yesterday. So I'm not confident, but he's got more upside than any of those other options on that team.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, Omri Caspi's been having niggling injuries
he's
for a while.
Too, yeah.
I don't know what's really wrong with him, but it seems to be that there's something else he's probable, or he's...
He's got a calf issue.
Yeah. Do they think he's going to get back anytime soon?
Yeah, post-All-Star, looks like he's going to be back.
Oh, well, there goes that, because I was about to say maybe pick him up until Caspi comes back.
Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
And he's coming back, so there you go.
I think they'll all be back, apart from Malachi Richardson. And that's another thing that helps McLemore, is Richardson just tore his hamstring, and he's out for 8 weeks. So, well, 8 weeks or 6 weeks, regardless, it's a long time. But you're going to have Temple back, you're going to have Lawson back, you're probably going to have Caspi back as well. So they're three guys. Caspi doesn't really influence it too much, but it does a little bit because McLemore has been playing the three. So there are three guys coming back who are going to take those minutes. And there's a lot of those situations with these hot waiver wire guys at the moment, that it's like, okay, they're going to get a rush of guys coming back in. It's going to really impact what they do.
Yeah, that's true. Because I was going to say Garrett Temple is out, 2 weeks maybe? So he might miss maybe 1-2 games by the end of All-Star break.
I think Garrett will be basically pretty much ready to go after the break.
Yeah, and he's been... Well, this is probably one of his best seasons of his career. He'd been playing pretty well in Ty Lawson's absence up until then. So... I agree with you. I was about to ask you, is he purely benefiting from the injury crisis? But you explained it all anyway. So, I think, yeah, his value probably drops down. His minutes probably drop down to the 20s because they've got to find minutes for Matt Barnes' corpse somehow still. I don't know why they continue to play him, but anyway.
Chuck him out in the field, let him get angry. Well, that's all that matters.
After All-Star break, this is when, you know, a lot of people have little injuries and they tend to come back nice and refreshed after the week off. Do you have any sleepers who you think would have big second halves of the year?
The guy that you got to make sure that is owned in your league is Jeremy Lin. He's back, first game back after the All-Star break. I don't think there'll be any concerns with him playing good minutes, and he was really productive before he went down with this ridiculous hamstring problem that we've seen. But he is going to be a guy that is going to really influence things in the second half of the year. I think that he's got, if not top 50 upside, he's got top 70 upside the rest of the way, and that's an influencer. Someone who comes back and is a top 120 player, then you give or take. It doesn't mean anything in the end. But a guy that can come back that could push the top 50 can really change things around. So he's the guy that, if he is around, you grab him immediately. He's the number one that comes to my mind. The other guys I want to have a look at, Joshy Richardson, who could be coming back from Miami. It's a little bit crowded with the way that Deion Waiters has been playing, but he'll lose a couple of minutes. Rodney McGruder will lose some. Wayne Ellington might go out of the rotation. And Richardson's a key piece of what the Heat have got. He's one of their young rebuilding core pieces. And he was turning in some really good games before that second injury, that foot problem that he had after that knee issue at the start of the year. And Richardson can be a top 100 guy as well.
Yeah, true. I mean, James also picked sleepers as well. Obviously not as good as that Jeremy Lin one. That actually snuck.
I've had Jeremy Lin in the injury list since, January? The start of January, so I've completely forgotten about him.
Yeah, that snuck past me altogether. But I've gone with Gary Harris purely because I've watched enough of him because I'm a Nuggets fan as well. he's snuck through in February, really. In the last four games, he's hit over 16 points three times, 20 once. Gets two steals a game, hits a couple of triples, shoots a good percentage. Not really much on rebounds and assists, but I mean, he makes up with his points, steals, and good field goal percentage for me. And I reckon he's going to flourish after All-Star break. He's finally going to get the chance. He's free of injury now. Gets a little break. Isn't playing this time in the All-Star break, unlike he did last year. And he should be fit and ready to go, I think.
Yeah, I've got... I'm having a look at Patrick Beverley here, Tim. I think he might be some good values. The Rockets, even though they've played the most games in the NBA, I think he's had some injuries, and you know the Rockets haven't been too great over the past couple of weeks. But he's going to be rested. The Rockets have a very easy schedule heading home into the playoffs. Home heavy and gets a lot of weaker teams. So his three-pointers that he adds, his steals, rebounds, very good rebounding guard as well, and he's got a career high in assists. So I think he's a good little sneaky addition there.
Yeah, there's quite a lot. Some of them, all the ones that you actually said, Josh, went under my radar completely. I didn't even think about them. But
that's why he's a king, Tim.
Yeah, that's why. that's why he's the go-to guy. All right, sorry, Josh.
I was going to say, your picks sound very much like they're the players that come from the teams that you guys support.
They might be.
That's fair enough. You'd watch them more than anyone.
Exactly.
Not concerned with Beverly's groin. I don't think you should be, but you're not. No, you have any concern?
No, not concerned. I think it was just more of a, you know, the Rockets were playing shit out, so they didn't think they were going to get back into it. So they're just like, yeah, sit down, mate.
Just have a week off.
Yeah, exactly.
Another man who actually just recently moved from the Nuggets, Yusuf Nurkic. Are you keen on him, Josh?
The situation's good for him. He is a worry, mentally. He's got concerns there, but I think at least for 2 months, he'll be able to be stable. The other guys that are there, Myers Leonard and Eddie Davis, like, they're not great options. He played well in the first game against Rudy Gobert. You do have to watch his free throw percentage because he's sub 50% on the season, so that could really impact your free throw percentage category. But otherwise, you got to grab him. You just got to add him. He's got the potential to put up big numbers. He's also got the potential to be a complete knucklehead, but he can go out there and put up numbers. Whether he starts or not, I don't think it makes too much of a difference. He just needs 25 or so minutes a night, and I don't think that, especially the way that Stotts has not enjoyed what he's seen from Leonard and Davis this season, that there's no real concern with Nurkic getting that sort of playing time, and he'll be getting the bulk of those minutes, I reckon, almost immediately after we get back to action next week.
You're actually 100% hit the nail on the head there. If you're a fantasy person who likes to watch your players play, and you turn on the Portland game and watch the first minute and see Yusuf Nurkic miss his first free throw, just turn it off. Because honestly, he's going to have a terrible night. His mental problems are, like, he can't deal with making a mistake altogether. And the thing that I find funniest is he's a big boy, but he refuses to use his body, and he hates when he gets fouled. Like, he literally has the massive sook when he gets fouled, and he'll just miss both his free throws and then run down the other end of the court and just stand there. And, you know, I don't get it. I just seriously don't get it.
He's just one of those guys who's just as likely to headbutt someone as score 40 points. So
he's legit a monster. I ran into him on the street over in Vegas last year, and he is legit just like a frighteningly sized human.
Which is what I don't understand. How does he get bullied?
He's so big. I don't know.
But who was it he blocked and stood over? Was it DeMarcus Cousins?
Yeah, and Marcus Sol.
You gotta have you gotta have balls, or you gotta be an idiot to stand up to DeMarcus Cousins.
I think he's a bit of both.
He's definitely both.
And he's got an anger problem as well. So altogether, if he can fix up the mental problems and make sure that he's strong and he can deal with making a mistake for once, he's going to be good.
Paulin needs a little bit of nasty, so I reckon that works well for him. I'm happy with that trade. I'm happy with Mason Plumlee, as well, for the Denver Nuggets team.
Not sold yet, but I think after he learns the system, Jokic-Plumlee tandem passing, there's going to be about 45 assists a game just in the front court. So.
Is he fantasy relevant, Josh?
I don't think so. I tell you what, and this is what people have asking me a lot about the Denver situation. Okay, he played 34 minutes in that first game. It was also Jokic's worst game since he re-entered the starting lineup. I'm not putting that all on Plumlee, but that situation with absolutely zero spacing around Jokic doesn't give him the ability to do what he necessarily needs to do to get that offense humming. And Plumlee's a good passer. That's why he's a perfect guy to just come in behind Jokic and just keep the passing going to a lesser degree. His vision is not there, but that none of them can go out and guard on the perimeter. He's fairly slow of foot. And the Nuggets were missing Kenneth Faried. They were missing Darrell Arthur. They were missing Danilo Gallinari. They were missing Wilson Chandler. That's four guys who play at the four. And yes, the Rooster and Chandler will play a little bit at the three, but they also play a lot at the four as well. So we're not going to see him be starting next to Jokic. And we're not going to see him be... They'll play maybe 5 minutes crossover, so that might give him 22 or 23 minutes. But he was getting, say, 28 or 29 minutes a game in Portland, and he was barely cracking the top 100. So with an almost guaranteed downtick in minutes, if we just ignore that first game, because we should, because there was four or five guys... Moutier's another guy that was out. Not that they play the same position, but that's touches and usage and pushes guys down positions and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, these guys are going to come back in, and then Plumlee fits exactly what they need, as a backup center, because they had Fareed playing backup center, which is a joke. But they needed a backup center, and they can continue to play the exact same game style with a center who can facilitate things. And that's where he should fit. Back him up, play him 20, 22 minutes, 23 minutes, whatever it is, and that's only going to be relevant in deeper formats, I believe.
Yeah, no, I was thinking the exact same thing. The thing that worries me the most about Plumlee is... he's going to come on exactly as the backup center, and when Jokic and him cross over, they do want to play a similar, well, not exactly the same, but a similar game. They both want to be the person who gets into position in the post and then has a triple threat where they can post up, pass, or do whatever they want, really. Watching him in that last game, purely because he doesn't know the system, he wasn't ready to receive passes from... Man.
He was so, like, not ready for those passes.
Do you see the one where he tried to post up Cat before the ball even came?
The first 2 minutes, and then it just hit him in the arms. He wasn't even looking. Jokic just sweating up straight away. Oh, God. Look, and that's fine. That's going to take time for him to realise that, you know what, I'm playing with the greatest passing centre literally of all time. And I know that's hyperbolic, but he is literally the best passing center that's ever played the game, I would say, the way that Jokic sees things. And it's going to take some time because you're not expecting that sort of crap. So anytime that, if you guys, I'm sure you guys have played multiple team sports, and if you play with someone who's just transcended, it just takes time for you to realize, oh, he can do that, but nobody else can. So I've got to be able to adjust to this stuff. And once you can, it works. Well, you see how well Gaz Harris works off the ball. Like, he just knows once Jokic gets it at the top of the key, back cuts, and he just gets there because he knows that the ball is getting there no matter what, and it's not something that everyone is used to.
Yeah, and I mean, Plumlee wouldn't have received a pass in his time in Portland either. Dame's not going to pass to him.
Exactly. All he does is alley-oops or putbacks.
Dame doesn't make it past the three-point line half the time before he just pulls up and shoots, so he wasn't expecting anything like that.
Well, another episode that's been derailed by Jokic.
Well, it has to happen, James.
Just talking about Jokic.
James, it has to happen.
I can't believe it.
What, you talk James Harden MVP, I talk Nikola Jokic.
Well, James Harden MVP, we're talking to James Harden right now, are we?
No.
I put some money on Jim Harden at the start of the year for the MVP. Yeah. I got him at $21. I was pretty happy.
Me too. And the tab?
Sports bet, I think.
I think I got him on the tab at 23, I think. I'm pretty handy with that.
I got Embiid for Rookie of the Year as well, so I was pretty happy to take two bets. But I'm a little bit worried about Embiid now, just with sitting out, but surely he gets it. So I'm pretty happy putting on those two bets.
Nah, he'll get home easy. Well, it would be wrong of us, since we're talking about James Harden, it'd be wrong of us not to congratulate you for winning the inaugural NBA Lookalikes competition.
it's a great honour.
You and Jim Harden taking it out. Did you have you ever got the has anyone ever said you look like James Harden before?
I'm trying to it's a pretty common thing. Most times they go with the white guys with the beard, so like Miroslav Radulica, that's a pretty common one. There was some other guy, I can't remember who the other guy was, that looked fairly I think it was
Chris Kamen.
Cubs pitcher. Yeah, man, if I got the Chris Kamen look alike, I'd have to reassess my entire look, because that's not a good look. That's like wispy hair, wispy beard, zombie style look. If someone got that on me, I'd really want to invest in a pretty significant mirror, I reckon.
Maybe have to give it the old beard a shave after that.
Definitely changing something up if that was a common thought.
Oh, Chris Kamen, poor man. Talking about another man with a beard, how about Derek Williams with Kevin Love dropping out of the rotation with his knee injury or back injury or whatever he's got now? I can't keep it up to date with Kevin Love.
It's his knee this time.
Yeah, it's his knee, that's the one.
I didn't get a chance to talk about this on my podcast because I forgot, because I spewed too much other shit, but the Cavs, to know that Kevin Love, right, we know he's heading for surgery, and then to continue to play him, especially in that back-to-back where they said we're going to rest everyone, and then they changed their mind and played him, and played Kevin Love through it, and then gave him the surgery. Like, if you knew he was going to have surgery on his knee, it was heading towards surgery, don't play him on a back-to-back. Give him the surgery. Why wait a week and let potentially more damage come? That is completely negligent on the medical staff, on the coaching staff, on that entire organization. And sometimes I don't understand how these people get employed by billion-dollar organizations when they honestly have no ounce of common sense whatsoever.
Well, how is it possible that a guy they knew is requiring surgery on his knee, is how can you possibly put him back out there when we've got, 20 years plus now of medical, knowledge on that is the worst, probably the worst thing you can possibly do?
They're ruining him because he can't.
Running on your knee once it's f***ed is like common sense. Like, ow, it hurts, stop. I mean...
But they said, he's going to have surgery. Cool. Well, give him the surgery. What are they going to say? Oh, sorry, there's a waiting list for a week. I don't think they've got that problem. And even if they said, we've got to wait a week for the surgery because the surgeon that we used has, got gallstones or whatever the reason, don't
take
play
a safe,
for
mate.
A week.
Exactly.
Just sit down. Just, Kevin, put a suit on, watch the games, and then we'll have it done, and we're all set. I think
we can
afford
it. We scrubs sit in public waiting rooms, mate, to see a hospital. I don't think he can manage sitting down, waiting for the surgery to come around.
Anyway, back to Derek Williams. Sorry, I sidetracked you guys. this is something that I often say when trades go down or signings happen. Okay, Derek Williams was signed by the Heat as a free agent this summer, right? They're literally starting Luke Babbitt as their starting power forward.
Yeah,
Derek he's not a good player.
He's not a good player. He's very far from a good player. Derek Williams could not get in the rotation in Miami. So that says a lot about how good Derek Williams is. He couldn't play in Sacramento. He couldn't play in Minnesota. He did a little bit of stuff in New York, but he's not that good. So now he goes to a better, yes, there's an opening, but he goes to a better team. So what makes us think that he's going to become, all of a sudden he's going to become good again? Yeah, people had this same thought about Jeremy Grant when he went to Oklahoma City. Oh, but yeah, they need someone. But you know what? He couldn't play on the worst team in the NBA for 3 years. He barely saw the court. So now he's going to go to a better team and all of a sudden become this great option. Now, Channing Frye is going to start. Yeah, Dick Jefferson's over there still getting his minutes. Williams will play mid-20s. But what does he do that's good? Can score? Or what else does he do? Like, literally, what else does he do apart from score?
JaVale McGee without being as funny,
He doesn't do anything. He can't block shots. He doesn't rebound.
He's there, Yeah, he's there to, realistically, he's there to stand under the rim and LeBron to make a flashy pass and just put it in. That's about it.
10 points a game, maybe 8 points a game, maybe he gets to 12 points a game and do fuck all, basically. And that's...
Exactly.
Oh, there are plenty of other guys. Look, if you're in a 16-team
league... Be athletic, that's what he'll do.
Yeah, look, throw down a dunk that looks good because you've got flashy hair that bounces up and down, and that's cool. But otherwise, he just doesn't bring enough. He'd need 35 minutes a game on the Sixers for me to go, you know what, this guy's a must-own player. Not as a backup on the Cavs, and when he gets out there with Kyrie and LeBron, do you think they're going to go, you know what, we probably shouldn't shoot it so that so Derek can have a few shots? It's not
happening. Yeah, I don't think they'll be thinking about him. To be honest, I just wanted to go back to Kevin Love. I think their plan here is a bit of a conspiracy theory. They're ruining Kevin Love, so when they send him to New York for Carmelo, that doesn't come back to bite him in the ass.
Yeah, absolutely. He won't challenge him in the Eastern Conference Finals.
They're ruining his knee. It's a plan.
Hey, you never know. That could be the thing. Or they wanted to deliberately get him out so they could say, look, he's not helping us the rest of the season. We've got a healthy body in here.
Maybe Frank Isola was right all along.
just quietly, shout out to Frank. He's one of the best Twitter followers out there.
He's a funny guy.
His tweets are very, very humorous.
Well, LeBron strikes again, let's be honest.
Yeah, LeBron
strikes again. See you later.
We'll see what GM LeBron can do. Talking about another trade, does Terrence Ross get more of a benefit from this trade than Serge Ibaka in terms of fantasy output?
Yeah, Serge Ibaka goes down and Terrence Ross goes up. Now, it doesn't mean that Terrence Ross is becoming better than Serge Ibaka, but in terms of overall impact on the two guys, Ross improves and Ibaka goes down. Now, it's not to say that Ross is going to improve enough to be a guy that you need to add everywhere, because realistically, he's a guy that hits threes and gets steals. And that can help some people, but it's not going to be helpful for everybody. He definitely doesn't get assists. He's not blocking shots. He's not a strong rebounder. He'll score okay, but he's also got to deal with some dickheadery down in the league. Will they start him? Will they play him? Will they persist with Aaron Gordon at the three and leave Ross in Jody Meeks's 20-minute role off the bench? Like, who knows what they do? But I think it almost can't hurt his value. It has to go up, and Serge's will have to go down.
Well, I can I just say Orlando's probably one of the worst franchises in the NBA.
Rob Hennigan is a moron.
They turned all of Depot and all these other players into Terrence Ross and a first round pick, which is not fantastic.
Tobias Harris, Victor Oladipo, DeMontis Sabonis into half a season of Brandon Jennings and Terrence Ross and a pick in the late 20s.
That's pretty worthwhile.
And they gave up Mo Harkless for nothing.
Yeah, Mo Harkless for nothing.
And they gave up Kylo Quinn for nothing.
And look at him balling over there in New York. Yeah,
they had Ilyas Ova on the books as well.
Yeah, had Ilyas Ova as well. He turned out to be pretty good over there in Philly.
And Ilyas Ova was in that deal to get Ibaka. That's how they got rid of him. And Deadman. They also had Dwayne Deadman and let him go.
I think the thing with Dwayne Deadman is that's more of a pop, just being, you know, he's a boss.
No. Deadman was good before that. He wasn't used very often, but he was good before that. He showed lots of flashes when Vooch went down after they'd gotten rid of O'Quinn. He showed flashes to be a guy. Look, there's not many big guys that can go out there and block shots at his rate, grab boards, and score as efficiently as he does from both the field and from the line. Not many players that can do it at the same level as him, and they completely undervalued him. But that's not a surprise. Yeah. It's Orlando.
Instead, they went and got Biombo, who blocked about 5 shots in the final in the Eastern Conference Finals, they decided to pay him $70 million.
Absolutely ludicrous! Like, the guy can't even catch the ball.
If they trade Vucevic, they're all matters of fucked. That guy has been the only good player in the franchise for the last 5 years, and they're going to get rid of him. That's a disaster over there in Orlando.
Is their best player for a buy? Look, and Biombo, what they're doing with Biombo now is fine. Playing him 16 to 18 minutes as a reserve big man that comes in and plays defense, which is exactly what he did in Toronto, and it's what he should have done in Charlotte before they mistakenly just declined to even pick up his or to make him a restricted free agent, which was ridiculous on their part as well.
Yeah.
So this is his role. Like, he can't play big minutes because he is a complete non-factor offensively. He can't catch. He can't shoot. He can't finish. He provides no threat whatsoever. And yes, the defense is good, but when you're an absolute, not even a zero, when you're a negative on the other end, it's a big deal. But the role he's in now is fine. It just shouldn't have cost $72 million when you could have had Dwayne Dedman to do exactly the same thing.
I just wonder how sometimes these people get picked up. Like, how do they get into the league? Isn't the first thing you want to do when you learn how to play basketball, learn how to shoot, learn how to score?
He was one of those guys that was, you know, I don't remember which country he came from, exactly.
Congo.
Was it Congo?
Yeah, so I think he's from the Congo, yeah.
One of those, yeah, that didn't play basketball initially and then came out of nowhere with, you know, crazy jumping and crazy ability to block shots, basically the same way that a Barker did, but, you know, didn't have a background in shooting and never learnt it. Serge, on the other hand, he learned how to shoot and became a really good shooter. But Biombo just has no ability to do that. He wasn't playing basketball from a young age, from what I remember.
He's probably, you know, he's probably done the same thing in Barker, doesn't he? He's 35 years old right now. That's why...
there's definitely that rumour.
he looked so good because he was, you know, 6 years older than everyone thought he was.
Yep.
And that's why he had the leaping ability, but...
Don't talk about Thon like that, Jack.
We won't discuss Thon, maybe, because... He's Australian. We love Thonmaker.
I don't know if you guys heard the Howard Beck, Zach Lowe podcast, listened to it last night. Apparently it's not pronounced Maker. We've all been saying it incorrectly. It's Makur.
Makur.
Jeez. But apparently there's an R roll. That's the first time I've said it out loud. So maybe Makur. It's going to take a while for me to get used to it. Thon Makur. Yeah, I've got to get used to it. But yeah, I've got to make an effort because I really despise names being pronounced incorrectly, and now that I've heard it, I feel like a dick for calling him Maker all this time, but got to make an effort to do it.
Yeah, well, I don't think many Australians are going to be calling him Maker. I can tell you that right now.
Boy, how about that Maker bloke, eh?
that sounds pretty accurate.
Well, Josh, thank you for having not only the King of Fantasy on, but the King of Name Pronouncing as well. Yeah.
So, the linguist.
I do my best.
The NBA linguist, Josh Lloyd. Do you want to tell everyone listening how they can check you out?
You can check me out on Twitter at redrock_Beeble, and you can find the podcast, which is now called, boys, the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast.
Locked On Fantasy, my bad.
Go check that out at all those places mentioned, and of course on Basketball Monster, which should be your number one resource for DFS and season-long fantasy basketball, where I am the lead content provider and analyst over at Basketball Monster.
Thanks for that, Josh. We really appreciate you coming on.
No worries, boys.